It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer, I just play one on a podcast. Hello and welcome, everybody, to Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the galaxy. It's Tuesday, and we're glad to have you here. Welcome to episode 161 of Two Nerds in a Pod. Our two hosts are, of course, myself, Maction, a tech enthusiast and occasional streamer, and my good friend, stand-up comedian, Mr. Lom Galuka, also known as Mr. Nice Guy 425. You know what this show's all about. It's about the issues in gaming this week with a little bit of history, a little bit of news, a dash of legalese, and, as always, a load of comedy. So, welcome, and of course, special thanks to our returning sponsor, Game Insider Magazine, and Mr. Nice Guy. How are you doing, sir?
Dude, I'm doing fantastic, man. I had a lot of really good gaming experiences this week that we'll talk about later. I've got some comedy shows coming up in the next couple weeks. It's starting to get back to normal. And more importantly, Mac, most importantly, you and I were able to collaborate this week with another podcast. Why don't you give the rundown of how that went? I thought it was fantastic.
Well, yeah, sure. So hot on the heels of their win at the Podcast Awards, Things I Got Wrong at Trivia, who won in our category, they invited Mr. Nice Guy and I to be on their show. And yeah, we wound up getting the message, and we were like, yeah, we'd love to do the trivia show.
Yep. Yeah.
And then they were like, you know, can you do it on this date, which would have been, you know, last Friday? And we were like, yeah, great, that'll be terrific. And I was flabbergasted and floored that we found out when we did it on Friday that they were going to turn it around and have it good to go on Monday. So yeah, it was a quick turnaround and a fun time. They split Mr. Nice Guy and I into two different teams. And, well, it was just a really great time.
Yeah, it was fantastic, and I had listened to an episode of their pod, but I, you know, you never know what it's going to be like as a guest, you know what I mean? And I'm not, like, the best at trivia. In fact, I was a little nervous, but after listening to it, I felt more at ease, and then after being on it, it was just a fantastic, super fun experience. Not just a good podcast, but also run by really, really good people, so I had a blast, yeah.
It's true, and it's surprising how small of a world it is. And I won't say anything more than that, but Mr. Nice Guy knows what I mean by that.
Yeah, it's a crazy small world. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah. So anything else exciting from this week? I've got at least one thing.
Dude, I want to hear what was exciting with you, so tell me about it. Go for it, man.
So this weekend, my parents actually came out to visit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they spent a few days staying at our place, and we got to show them around the one country store and the whole lot of nothing out here in rural Nebraska. I think they were impressed.
Did you take them to the Dairy Queen, right? There's a Dairy Queen out there, right? All little towns have a Dairy Queen,
yeah,
I assume.
There is a Dairy Queen. So we did actually stop.
Did you really?
By the Dairy
Queen. I was actually 100% joking, but that's awesome. I love DQ.
But you were 100% right on, in spite of the kidding. So yeah, it was definitely an interesting, fun week, but it was really great to see them. So that was kind of the cherry on top of my
weekend. Did they drive out there, or how did they get out there?
They did drive out here.
Well, dude, I'm glad you got to do that, and I'm glad we got to do that podcast. And on that note, I say we do what we do best and get to our podcast and jump right into the gaming news, my friend. What do you think about that?
Let's do it.
Awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, this is episode number 161 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. And this week, we've got a doozy for you with all the cool gaming announcements that have been made. Let's jump right in to this first one, Mac. This is just one that's right up my alley, right up your alley, since we both love the Metroidvania. I would say we're connoisseurs of the Metroidvania. Would you agree with that statement? Is that accurate?
Absolutely. We are connoisseurs of the Metroidvanias.
That's exactly right. So anyway, this first one comes from GameSpot.com by Stephen T. Wright. From Hollow Knight to Ori 2, there is no shortage of excellent indie Metroidvanias for fans to sink their teeth into. However, the follow-up to one of the best examples of the genre, Axiom Verge, has been delayed beyond 2020 due to development proceeding slower than expected. As developer Thomas Hatt reveals in a recent blog post, Axiom Verge 2 is a much more complex game than its predecessor in terms of everything from enemy AI to the structure of the world itself. Bottom line, Mac, this game is going to get delayed. It was not on the top of my radar, but it was definitely on my radar. Is this one that you're disappointed about being pushed back? Were you looking forward to this?
Honestly, I'm kind of happy that it's been pushed back. Hear me out, because I haven't played the first Axiom Verge yet.
What?
And having it be pushed back means I've got like more time. Don't put off till tomorrow what you can put off till the day after tomorrow. So in this case, this is great for me.
So Axiom Verge, here's what I would say about it. I would say it's not Hollow Knight. It's not Symphony of the Night. It's not even A Knight's Tale, which is not a Metroidvania, but it also ends in night, which is why I said that. But it is a good game. It's probably like a 7.5 out of 10. That's where I would put Axiom Verge. But I had fun with it. Now, I'm excited that it's delayed too, but for a different reason. I feel like I'm excited because this year is already so chock full of games. Like, this has been probably the best year of games since the year we had, like, Celeste and Red Dead Redemption and God of War and all that stuff. It's been a really good year, and so I don't want this game to get swallowed up when it does come out. So I'm hyped that it is pushed back. Mac, here's my question for you, though. Top Metroidvanias of all time. Give us a couple examples of your favorites, if you had to pick some.
Symphony of the Night, of course, great. Very symbolic of the genre as a whole. Obviously, Chasm is definitely my number one. Hollow Knight is pretty great.
Yeah, so Hollow Knight, as you know, is my number one Metroidvania, and also my number one indie game of all time. If I had to pick another Metroidvania, honestly, dude, maybe Super Metroid. Like, that game was pretty much Metroidvania perfection as well. It's not replayable as much as a Hollow Knight as far as going back and collecting stuff, but just a really good example of going through and getting things. And also, this year we got Ori and the Will of the Wisps, which is a fantastic sequel to the first one and a very, very well-made game, and I've been enjoying that as well. So anyway, on to the next news story. Mac, this is one that will get the creative juices in your brain flowing. This one really caught me off guard. This is on IGN.com by Joseph Noop. The Doom franchise is no stranger to being installed on unexpected devices, but this might be its most delicious yet. Instagram user Richard Mallard has managed to run Doom Eternal on his Samsung fridge, thanks to xCloud. Spotted by The Verge, Mallard showed a video of his results to his personal profile on Monday, showing an entry level of Doom Eternal running and responding to his Xbox controller inputs on the Samsung fridge's screen. Mac, this story is all that it is at face value, right? This guy was able to use Project xCloud, Microsoft's streaming service compatible only with Android right now, to get the game playing on the screen on his fridge. So my question to you is, as a creative genius yourself, what type of non-traditional screen do you want to play games on? Like, where do you see people taking this now that it's been accomplished on a freaking fridge of all places?
So I will take a moment and take issue with the premise and say that because with xCloud, what's happening is the game's actually being run server-side, not being run client-side. So, I don't think it's fair to say, run Doom, that, you know, that it'll will run on a fridge. But that being said, there is no doubt in my mind that Samsung fridge has sufficient capabilities for someone to actually run like Doom from, say, Super Nintendo, you know, that generation of consoles and the like on it. So I'm sure it could run Doom, but this is not it running Doom. Nonetheless, all the pedanticism or pedantics aside, to answer the question, where would I like to see it run? I mean, honestly, Mr. Nice Guy, I can't think of anything because that running it on the fridge has kind of been my go-to gag, especially when I've been talking about Skyrim. You know, I keep talking about Skyrim will not be done until it's running on a fridge.
You know, we won't be done with Skyrim ports till it's running on a fridge.
What, Mac? It brings new life to that really, really terrible, corny, hacky dad joke, is your refrigerator running, that they used to always say back
well,
in the
day. You better kill some monsters.
You better go blow up some zombies. Well, here's my thing, dude. I would love to see people be able to use Project xCloud on the screens in their car. Like, if someone has a car that has a touchscreen, not while they're driving, dude. But just
how,
like,
else does one operate the screens of their car save whilst driving?
While it's parked, and you have the key turned. That's it. Like,
okay.
Like, for example, my wife's car, the kids will watch movies in the car, right? And I'm not talking about those screens that some minivans have. I'm talking about, like, the screen that's in the front driver's side, where you're usually controlling the music, you know, like a less fancy Tesla screen, right? I think that would be kind of cool. Just to be able to sit in your car, play some Project xCloud on that screen, and then obviously turn it off before you start driving, and then safely drive to your destination. I think that would be dope. Anyway, enough of that news story. On to the next one, Mac. Let's talk about backwards compatibility and how it relates to hardware. This is two news stories in one, and I want to get your perspective on this. The first one comes from GameInformer.com, and it's by Liana Rupert. It's very, very simple. It says that both the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X and S are killing it when it comes to backwards compatibility, including in the realm of VR. While PSVR will work on the PS5, including PS4 VR games with it, there is one oddity that players should keep in mind. The PS5 camera won't work with it, and you'll need a PS4 DualShock controller. So bottom line from that story, Mac, the PS4 controller, or rather the PSVR, is going to be compatible with the PS5, going from the PS4 to the PS5. Now, on the Xbox side of things, we have a different news story involving some other peripherals. This is on GameInformer.com, also by Liana Rupert. And it says the new... Skipping down, it says Harmonix has confirmed that Rock Band 4 and all of its DLC will work on next-gen consoles at launch. Even better, current-gen instruments will work as well, though it looks like some more testing on the functionality is still ongoing. So I'm kind of curious, like, do you think that obviously it's a good thing that they're not making people spend more money, but why are these companies that have traditionally been so money hungry now making peripherals backwards compatible, like a PlayStation VR headset where they could have easily gotten people to pay $300 more for a new one, or all this Rock Band stuff where they could have easily said, nope, you got to leave that behind on your PS4. PS5 and Xbox, you gotta have the new stuff. Like, why are they now taking this route when they never have before? It's interesting to me.
Well, I couldn't speak so much to PlayStation, to Sony's side of things, but I will say that as someone who's played an unholy amount of old video games on Microsoft devices, Microsoft does not get enough credit for the work that they put into trying to make things backwards compatible across versions of Windows, and sure. I feel like that philosophy has bled its way into the console side of stuff.
Okay.
And so I feel like this is kind of what I expect from Microsoft based on the past. But as for Sony, then yeah, Sony, I'm just not sure. You would think that they could at least make some mad monies, you know, doing selling extra adapters or something.
Nickeling and diming people, exactly. And you know what's interesting too? I looked into the controller situation again just because I wanted to get a little bit of a refresher. And Xbox controllers are going to be backwards compatible, right? PlayStation are not. And I know we talked about this before. Let me rephrase that. PlayStation 4 controllers will work on PS5, but only with PlayStation 4 games. And that is for Sony to be able to capitalize on the new technology and the new features that PS5 will offer. So to me, that almost says that Sony is innovating more than Xbox as far as the controller and as far as the features that will be in the next gen of games, whereas Microsoft is saying, hey, it's not about the controller, it's just about the game, right? Don't worry about the controller making beeping noises when you set off an alarm. Don't worry about the vibrations or the gyroscope being new. We're just going to let you use your old controller, and I kind of like that. Would you agree, Mac, that as a gamer, you have some controllers that you just feel a connection with, that like you've had them for a long time or you customize them and it's part of your gaming experience?
Well, sure. I mean, for my part, I tend to opt for controllers with even fewer inputs, but that's because I'm old school myself. Now, when we actually had Ishmobile on as a guest, this is one of the things that that he mentioned, was that there's some concern about, you know, being held back, you know, with that pure compatibility with the controls being held back. And mentioned that, just a good episode to go back and listen to. But I don't know. I don't know as it's to say that that making it about the game rather than about the tech, you can make the argument that that the technology is what allows you to really set the game free and therefore make it all about the game, unrestrained by the technology, or at least less constrained by the technology. So I hear what you're saying, and I think there's an argument to be made that it, in the opposite way, that yeah, it can work, and it can work even better with more ways and methods of input and feedback.
That's a really good point. I think about some of the little details I experienced in a game like The Last of Us, where when your flashlight has issues, they say, you know, turn the controller sideways and tap it. And because there's a gyroscope in the controller, it allows you to turn it, and then the game senses it and your flashlight comes back on. And it's just a little detail that adds more immersion. So I think that you're 100% right with the point that you've made there. Mac, just for the sake of time, that's really the top news stories that I wanted to share. So that is our news for the week.
Okay, well, let's take a look now at the past, where we came from this week in video game history. And, well, you know, just to hit a couple of big ones, you know what? Let's hit the biggest one first. In 2016, yes, that long yesteryear of 2016, the podcast Two Nerds in a Pod was born. The name was changed from Man Cave TV to Two Nerds in a Pod. A little bit more, you know, organization and structure was put to it. And even though we recorded it earlier than the 14th, technically the 14th of October was the day that it was, you know, put up. So I couldn't wait until next week to commemorate it. It has to be commemorated now.
Yes,
so,
sir.
4-year anniversary of Two Nerds in a Pod. I wish I had like some of those party poppers and the like, but it's probably the best that I don't for recording purposes. Mr. Nice Guy, do you have a favorite episode of Two Nerds in a Pod?
Oh man, that's tough, dude. I feel like they're all my favorite. No, I'm just kidding. Like, I don't have a favorite episode, but I will say that the process of us coming up with a name for this podcast was a lot of fun. And I remember, like, some of the ones we bounced off each other. We had talked about, like, Open Alpha and just, like, a couple different things. And this whole thing really started out as two friends wanting to still hang out once a week, right? And that's still what it is at its core, but it's become more. We've built a community. We were nominated for a podcast award. You know, we're affiliates on Twitch now, and it's just growing slowly but surely into something that is even more than we ever thought it would be. So that's what I love about this pod, and I hope we keep doing it for many, many years.
Yeah, and I don't have I couldn't really pin it down to a single episode either. I can think of some times where I really felt on fire when we were doing the podcast. And
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
To go back and talk about the foundations, I remember most fondly as we were gearing up to do Two Nerds in a Pod, us going back and forth and sitting down. I seem to recall us going to like a Wendy's and sitting down and going over ideas on different segments and such until we had kind of, you know, put everything together. And it really changed because before, when we were doing everything as, you know, Man Cave TV, we were in your basement, your man cave.
And occasionally your living room sometimes as well.
Occasionally my living room. And then, of course, you were moving to Chicago. And so reformatting things to have more structure made it, you know, made it a good way to kind of commemorate the change and keep things going. And that's when we started doing, doing it via video chat and broadcasting as we recorded. So, yeah, 4 years, man.
It's one of the highlights of my week to this day. Love it.
Me too. And I don't think, I mean, it's been fantastic to have this excuse every week to be hanging out together.
That's right.
And of course, for those of you who are hanging out with us each week, whether that's been for the past 4 years or just for this week, you guys are bringing the friendship as well. So thanks. Well, 4 years, all the love. A couple of other games, just to, mention, that came out that I think bear repeating here. In 1991, the release of Metroid 2 Return of Samus on Game Boy. Good solid sequel there. In 1998, a game close to my heart, Need for Speed 3 Hot Pursuit, released on the PC. I wasn't exactly much of a driving simulator guy, but I have to admit that something about being chased by police, the AI kind of got better. Now, I hadn't really played the previous Need for Speed games, but as I understood it, the AI super improved there. You would have them throw out spike strips and blow your tires. And they'd work together. You could have more than one police officer chasing you at a time. 2007, though, probably the most notable in this week, the release of Portal, Half-Life 2 Episode 2, and Team Fortress 2 as the Orange Box for the PC and Xbox 360.
Yes, literally like one of the best bang for your bucks of all time.
Absolutely.
In a package. And such good games. Like, nothing in that game is not a quality game, dude. If I had to pick a favorite, I don't know if I could do it, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, I could pick a favorite. I really liked Portal. Half-Life 2 Episode 2 was fun, was good, it was great, but Portal just really did it for me. And Team Fortress 2, meh, it's
see,
okay.
And that's where I debate with you, because Team Fortress 2, like, obviously the Xbox 360 version, the inferior version compared to PC, but I feel like even on Xbox 360, so much replayability and fun that could be had in a game that was competitive, but not too serious. Like, it didn't take itself too seriously. There was some slapstick humor, and it was just a great game. Different classes, I loved it. And Portal made you think, right? And so it really had, like, the perfect mix of everything.
I really appreciated how Portal was in form. It was a first-person shooter. First-person viewpoint, you literally shot portals out of your portal gun, but in practice, it was a puzzle game. And just that, you know, melding of two different genres was just fantastic. I loved it. Loved it. But that's what I had for video game history. I think the most important stuff we've hit. Sorry for any smaller games that have been left out this time. Don't worry, we'll get them next year around this time for sure.
That's right. Well, let me acknowledge the chat real quick. We have a lot of our regulars here, and I won't take time to acknowledge all of you individually. We have not read comments today as much as normal, but we appreciate all of you. We love you. Thank you for being here. Please continue to talk in the chat. We appreciate you. Our next segment is called The Topic of the Week, where we discuss something relevant in gaming, the hottest story in gaming, and give our opinions on it. And Mac, in my opinion, this one is huge because it kind of shows us where the future of mobile gaming is headed. Now, Mac, I know you're a big Apple fan. Am I wrong in saying that to the people? We've been doing this 4 years. I feel like you always have good things to say about the iPhone and iOS. Is that right?
The sarcasm is strong with you, sir.
That's right. The sarcasm is strong with this one. Well, anyway, we have some stuff about Apple today, because today was the Apple event where they announced the new iPhone. And here's one of the things that came out of it. This is on IGN.com by Bo Moore. During its iPhone 12 event today, Apple announced that League of Legends Wild Rift, the upcoming mobile version of League of Legends, would be coming to iOS. Wild Rift, which was first announced a year ago, features a twin-stick movement system alongside other changes from the PC version of League. While an official date has not been announced yet, Apple said that Wild Rift would be coming to iPhone devices later this year. The game is also slated for Android devices and consoles, if we're being fair. Those interested can register for the closed beta. So, Mac, to me, this is big because it shows two things. Number one, it shows that mobile gaming is legitimate. And number two, it shows that big name games are willing to put themselves onto mobile. So, like, what do you think this says about the future of mobile gaming? Do you think we'll reach a point where a phone can compete with a console within, like, the next 5-10 years as far as accessibility and people's desire to game on a phone?
Well, for the longest time, I've been the opinion that porting a game to a mobile device is kind of fraught with peril, in the sense that because it's a different format and a different form factor, you can't just hope to slap, you know, throw a game onto a mobile device, slap a new control, you know, a tweaked control system on top of it, and hope that it works out well. And maybe that's just me being too unyielding in my perspectives, but even with stuff like xCloud and the like making, you know, playing of games on Android possible, or iOS if that ever happens, but I do think that it's more than just throwing a new scheme and throwing a mobile coat of paint over it. And I don't know how well this is going to play, but I mean, I think it's good. I'm glad that people will have an opportunity to, but I would prefer that game studios design experiences from the ground up for mobile rather than try and port things built in a different way onto mobile. I just don't think that the ability to make those experiences satisfactory when you cross them over like that is there.
Okay, so here's my thoughts, because we've seen this a couple times. There's Fortnite that's available on iOS and Android devices, and there is also, I read today, XCOM 2, which is not a game that I'm super familiar with, but it's a well-known game, right? And so those are all going to be on mobile, or are on mobile already in the case of Fortnite. So it's interesting to me that two of the major games that are now on mobile are free-to-play games. And I almost wonder if they feel like, well, we've got nothing to lose. Let's put this on mobile. Let's see how it does. We're not going to charge people for it. We're going to let them continue to play and make microtransactions. And it's interesting because I watched the Apple event, and when they were talking about League of Legends, they said something to the effect of, previously, to be competitive in this game, you had to be sitting at your desk. You had to be on a PC. But now you can do it on a phone. And, you know, when I look at the price of the iPhone, the cheapest one is going to be $699. That's a lot of money. And that is more than the consoles cost. Now, granted, phones can make calls and they can do all types of other things. But if people are willing to pay that much for a phone, I feel like it should probably do more than it does at this point. Like, they should be able to use it for full-fledged gaming experiences. And that's why I think we're going that direction. I'm interested to see what people have to say in the chat about it. Mac, if there was a phone, let's say, you know, like a phone that could do everything that the WikiPad could do. You remember the WikiPad from back in the day?
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
if there was a phone that said, you know what, Mac, you can play all your Steam games on me. There probably already is. You know, you can play, you know, The Last of Us. You can play Mario on me. Would that make you more likely to become a quote-unquote console gamer? If you could do it mobily, as opposed to just having your PC, which is kind of how you are now. Does that make sense, that question?
Yeah, and no, I don't think that for me, the mobility of it is nearly as big a draw. I think that the only times, for example, over the holidays, when I got to spend time with my family back in Omaha, I had the opportunity to play Breath of the Wild. Great experience. I loved it. And I only super rarely pulled the Switch off of the dock to play it in its mobile condition.
Okay.
And I would prefer to play it on the television from a seated position. It's just kind of the way I prefer to interact with the games. So the ability to, you know, pull the Switch off and play it, the mobility aspect, was only, it really wasn't a deal maker for me. Even when it was convenient, I could have kind of gone either way. Whereas just like, you know, maybe I'd just as soon suspend it and turn it off. So the mobile aspect doesn't really appeal to me in that way. It wouldn't in this hypothetical device, and it also wouldn't in an iPhone or Android device where I could, you know, play the games on the go.
So let me push back on that a little bit.
Sure.
Because that's a very, very valid point. But I think that Breath of the Wild may not be the best example because it is such a beautiful game. It's such a massive game. Like, unless you're just playing it on mobile because you're on the go, like, no one's going to play that not on a big TV, right? Because it's such a big, beautiful game. And I don't know what controller you were using. Were you using the Pro Controller? Or were you using the Joy-Cons?
It depended, but I mostly used the Pro Controller.
Right. Like, I don't think many people pull the Switch out of the dock and use the Pro Controller unless there's just not a TV nearby. I do agree with you. A game like Breath of the Wild should absolutely be experienced on a television. But I'll tell you, when my wife and I took a trip a couple years ago when I was playing Hollow Knight, I was ecstatic that I could take that game on the go with me. And because the Switch is such a big machine for indies, it's ideal for mobile gameplay. Now, a game like League of Legends, you could argue the same thing. It's much easier with a mouse. It looks better on a big screen on your computer. It's more responsive. But I think that if people are using the screen, the ability to play it mobily as an alternative to say, hey, you know what? I want to get a game of League in. I'm not at home. I can hop on my phone now and I can do that. Or for people who are just getting into it, maybe they don't have a really good PC and they just have an iPhone. They can get into it too. So to me, I think that mobile experiences, while they may have some of the same games, I don't think that we can always compare like, hey, I'd rather play Zelda on a TV than on a phone. I think that's kind of a different thing. I don't know. That's me.
Well, and to this point, that's actually interesting because Spear of the Morrigantes is saying, you know, almost solely plays his in mobile mode.
The
Switch. And Pazzy, you know, says that he's not played the Switch on a TV in a year or more, mostly playing it handheld mode, sitting at the PC while I watch videos. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of differences in the way things are played. Now, it's entirely possible that, like you were saying, because the Switch has positioned itself as kind of home of the indies, and that a lot of indie games are more designed to be, you know, smaller experiences, not in the sense that they can't be as impactful, but because they tend to be shorter in length or more bite-sized, rather, that that is very conducive to the, you know, on-the-go nature of it.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what happens, and I'm glad you brought the Switch into the conversation. I'll read this last comment from Pazzy, and then we can move on. He says, with regard to mobile specifically and not handheld in a Switch/Vita sense, since they have controllers built in, I tend to favor... Did you already read this comment? I tend to favor games specifically built for that touch control scheme. Menu-based games, city builders, and such where fast reflexes are not demanded. Yeah, so I think that goes back to the point that there's some games that are just better on mobile. And you know, people play the Switch how they want to play it. I'll say this last point, and then Mac, if you have any last points, you can make them as well. Living in like a city or near a big city like Chicago, if I ever have to take the train somewhere, I generally see a large number of people doing things on devices. Whether it's a Nintendo Switch, whether it's a laptop, whether it's a phone, whatever it is, people are watching movies, people are playing games, people are experiencing things that before they had to do in their house. And so, once again, I really like that these bigger mobile games are being, or that these bigger games are being put on mobile. Because now, if someone has an hour-long train ride twice a day, they can get their League of Legends game in, especially because this new iPhone has that 5G technology that will allow people to compete without the input lag, or rather without the internet lag that they would have had previously, assuming they have access to 5G. So that's all I wanted to say about this. Anything else from you, Mac, or should we move on, buddy?
On the subject of low input delay and lag with that 5G technology, press X to doubt.
Oh, really? Why are you hating on that? Let's talk about that for a minute and a half.
I'm not hating on 5G or anything. I'm just very... I don't have a lot of faith in the, you know, in the cell phone providers to make sure that there's good coverage or even, you know, good stuff in but a very few handful of places.
So you're right. And so let me address that, because this is important and I feel like we still have a minute or two.
It's our show. We can take all the time we
want.
Yeah,
that's right. They aren't going to run a commercial while I'm talking or while Mac's talking. Come on now. This is us. So during the conference, Verizon, the CEO of Verizon, actually was on the Apple conference, and he mentioned that they are partnering to offer 5G, and that today Verizon unlocked some of their quote-unquote 5G satellites. I don't know the term he used, but bottom line, Mac, you are correct. It's going to be available most prevalently in major cities first. They said New York, or major states. They said New York, or cities, right. New York, Chicago, and LA first, right? Then they said then it'll move to 9, and by the end of like a year from now, it's going to be in 160 cities, rural areas, and all over the place. But you're right. You know, if it's a rural southern Utah, you know, where we met, I kind of doubt that they're going to have access to 5G for a while. And so people in those places will miss out. You are 100% right about that.
And while there may be enough for, you know, for people to do it not on 5G, it's just, I'm just saying, I'm very cynical about, you know, the rollout of 5G. But nonetheless, that's not the video game's fault. That's not Apple's fault. That's somebody else entirely.
It's a good time to be alive regardless. The whole premise of this whole thing existing on a mobile device is exciting to me. So that has been our topic of the week.
All right, well, now let's look at something that's trying to get off the ground, a crowdfunding effort. As you know, we call this Kick or Kickstart, and we encourage everybody to tell us in the chat whether or not they think this should be kickstarted or whether it should be kicked out of here. I'm posting a link in the chat now to the project. We'll talk about the virtues and the vices, and, well, we'll go from there. There's your link. The project is for the Final Fantasy IX book of the gaming library that Third Editions Publishing Company is publishing. Now, a lot of these books, they have done this before, are video game related. Like I said, part of their gaming library series. They've done stuff on Final Fantasy VII, VIII, VI. They've done things on, I think they've got upcoming ones on Sekiro, Shadows Die, however that one's said, yeah. and many others. But Third Editions is a French publisher, so a lot of the books that they publish them in French, they also publish them in English. This Kickstarter has already been fully funded. It blew through its nearly $12,000 goal. It still has 15 days left to go, so this is almost certainly going to be done. If you fancy a first print edition of the book, then you're looking at about $30, $29 US, in order to get the standard edition, a collector's edition for $35, which comes with a variant cover and the like, more money if you want collector's boxes and the like. But if you just want the book that focuses on the history of the game in question, then you're looking at about $15 for the ebook as part of this Kickstarter. There is basically, these guys have done multiple Kickstarters before in the past, including they kickstarted for their Final Fantasy VIII and Final Fantasy VII books. Those seemed to go off without a hitch. While there is no playable demo for something like this, you can read some samples of the previous books and get an idea. And depending upon which of the games, like for example, the ones that they did on Zelda, focused on the game in one respect, more like from within the game you know, lore itself and some of the history surrounding that. Whereas the Final Fantasy VIII book, as I'm given to understand, having not read it yet, it focuses mostly on, you know, the game within its own context, you know, explaining backstory, explaining, you know, things like that within the game world itself. Whereas some of them focus more on the history of, say, like the making of the game, interviews including, and things like that. So yeah, Final Fantasy IX, not my favorite Final Fantasy, but definitely, but it definitely had its moments. VV was certainly my favorite, and I think everybody's favorite character. But anyway, that being said, Mr. Nice Guy, any thoughts, impressions here?
Yeah, so I think this is a good idea. I like it. I like that it's doing something to preserve a portion of history, right? And I like that these books do that. I think that $30 is probably a reasonable price. Here's the one thing I would say. If you're going to do an ebook, make the ebook free to everyone who buys the actual physical book, right?
And they are. To be fair, if you get the first print collector edition that the ebooks included, the collector, it looks like, also gets it. So you've got the option of, you can get the ebook for $15, and thanks for pointing that out. For $29, you can buy the standard edition of the book. For $35, it's the print, you know, it's the print collector's edition and the ebook, and then every tier above that includes the ebook as well. So yeah,
okay,
no,
that's
no.
Awesome then. Yeah, because honestly, if you buy the physical book, you're not going to want to carry it with you all the time, right? It's going to be a conversation piece. It's going to be something that you want to keep nice, in my opinion. And so give me the ebook so I can actually read what I want to read, and give me the physical so I can put it on the coffee table, or on the bookshelf. So I don't really have any other complaints about this. I don't know a ton about Final Fantasy. I know that you are more into that than I am. But it looks like this is just a nice, clean, well put together Kickstarter, no frills, no gimmicks, and reasonably priced.
Yeah, they've been doing this basically since 2015, publishing books like this, and they've got some good authors. From what I have been able to read in samples of the various books, it's pretty well put together, and they've, you know, and it seems as though they've done a good job on delivering on Kickstarters in the past. I definitely say Kickstart. The one thing that I will put a little asterisk on is that it is a little cheaper to purchase the collector's edition and purchase the print book through the Kickstarter, but the ebooks are ever so slightly cheaper from the store themselves. They come in at like $13.99. So, you know, save a buck if you just want the ebook and buy it direct on their store, as opposed to $15 through Kickstarter for the ebook. And due to the way that Kickstarter takes theirs from, you know, from the Kickstarter as a whole, maybe if you want to see more of the money go straight to the people instead of Kickstarter taking their cut for the project, and you're not in a big hurry for some of these rewards, maybe go and buy the print one when it's released and they get more of that cash. But I do say, in principle though, definitely Kickstart. I like the look of it, and I think it's good.
Yeah, support them early on, absolutely.
Yeah, let us know what you think, and again, they've already hit their funding goal, so they're not exactly in danger of missing, you know, or of not making it at this point.
Yeah, so I will vote. My vote is to Kickstart. I think this is a great idea, and it's cool to see something other than a game. It's cool to see something from someone who has already had multiple, or from some people, I should say, who have already had multiple successful Kickstarters in the past. So, I think eventually what they should do is they should make a bundle of like all the books that they've put out and allow like super fans who maybe got in partway through to just purchase like a big compendium of everything. So very good idea, Kickstart.
I would love to be able to just fill up a whole bookshelf with video game books. So agreed. So Kickstart from the both of us. Ishmobile is saying Kickstart. Generally, it's more favorable. Everybody is a little bit more favorable towards it, kind of as we are. But at the, but yeah, I think Kickstart is fairly safe to say. Don't really see much in the way of at least serious detractions in the live chat. So yeah, that's been Kick or Kickstart. We wish third editions publishing well, and I think I might be getting this one. I think actually I'll probably go and get the Final Fantasy VIII myself from their store. But that's nice. Been Kick or Kickstart. So everybody, you know what's coming next, so get that stuff in the chat.
That's exactly right. It's time for Nerdflex. A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the host, and you never quite do most of the time. Last week, though, was a rough week, Mac.
I had not played a single one of the games that came up, not a single one. So I was absolutely useless. Of course, I feel like I made up for it during things I got wrong at trivia.
Though, yeah. You did a pretty solid job.
I did a couple. I mean, I didn't get those questions about Dr. Dre correct, but you know, that's I mean, what
spoiler
else did
alert.
We expect?
Spoiler alert.
It's true.
Mac not knowing about rap. Well, anyway, it is time for Nerdflex. Get those questions in the chat. We are going to ask that if you put a question in the chat, that it be multiple choice. Because we get too many obscure questions for just anything in gaming, and while we are pretty much walking encyclopedias, we don't know everything about gaming. So let's jump right in. We have our first question from Spiero of the Morrigantis. Mac, here is question number one. In the game Silver, who is the protagonist's longtime friend? Silver, Glass, Vivian, Jug, Sakoon, or David? Mac, you got any thoughts on this, man?
Yet another game that I've not only never played of, but I've never heard of. At first, when you said in the game Silver, I thought we were talking Pokemon Silver, and I'm like, ah, yes, I have a ghost of a chance here. But alas, no, it dissipated faster than a ghastly in bright sunlight.
That's okay. I'm not familiar with Silver either, but what do you think, man? I feel like we go with different answers. I am going to go with Sakoon.
And I'm going to go with Glass. Because, yeah, I think Silver is just a bit too on the nose. So I'll go with Glass. You go with Sakune.
Let us know.
Yeah, let us know. The answer is Vivian. Published in 1999. It's a great RPG, mouse click game style. So Vivian is the protagonist's longtime friend. We'll have to add Silver to the list. Do you want to grab something from the test bank?
I got one from the test bank coming up right here. Here's the question, and I feel like this one's probably easy, but I feel like it could be a trick question. It's a Zelda question, and the question is, what was the first handheld Zelda experience? There's one that comes to my mind immediately, and Mac, I don't know if you have any idea, but I think I know the answer.
Link's Awakening?
I'm thinking it was Link's Awakening.
Yeah, I think Link's Awakening is correct.
Okay, let's
watch
try
it be
that.
Something like Tingle's Magical Palace.
I know. Oh my gosh, dude. The answer is a 1989 Game & Watch. Isn't that ridiculous?
I guess we lost.
I even said, like, I'm pretty sure this is could be a trick question, because that just seemed way too easy. Dang. Okay. We got some questions in the chat.
We do, and we'll take an order. Alex Mann's came next, which Alex Mann asks, which mob in Minecraft explodes when in close proximity? A, the Evoker, B, the Creeper, C, the Ghast, and D, the Witch. Now, I don't know as I've run into an Evoker, and the Ghast does shoot exploding balls, but I don't recall, you know, projectiles, but I don't recall it exploding when you get close, and the Witch throws potions, so I'm pretty sure
are Creepers the little green guys?
They are. I'm pretty sure it's the Creeper.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is too, from my little minimal Minecraft knowledge. So I'm gonna go with Creeper as well.
I think we've got enough time. You mind if we hit Pazzi's as well?
Let's do it.
So, ooh! Sweet, we got it right.
Nice.
It is
we got Alex
Creeper.
Mann's right. Good.
Thanks, Alex Mann. In the MMO Final Fantasy XI, never played, what is the name of the starting town centered around a mine? Is it the Republic of Bastok, the Kingdom of San Odira, or the Federation of Windhurst? Wow. I feel like if I was going to say which of these sounded like a mining town, I was going to say that the Federation of Windhurst sounds like a mining town to me.
Yeah, the kingdom doesn't sound like a place where you'd be mining necessarily. I feel like you'd be mining outside the kingdom, if that makes sense.
Yeah, right.
So I eliminate that answer. What did you say, Federation?
I said the Federation of Windhurst.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Republic. Republic Bastok.
All right, Pazzi, let us know how we did. The answer is the Republic of Bastok. Mr. Nice Guy is 2 for 4. I am 1 for 4 tonight. As a unit, though, 2 for 4 as a team.
That's right. That's
so nice. So thanks for bringing your trivia, and we look forward to more next time. And don't forget that we have sound tests available for previous episodes.
That's right.
About every 4th episode, there is a sound test with a perler that you can win if you get the sound correct. So go out and do. Well, now, it's time for a little bit of legalese. Now, obviously, there are some smaller news bits, but I'm going to focus on one small one real quick. You may recall that I talked a few weeks, maybe a month or so back, about the Legend of Zelda ROM hack for Ocarina of Time called Missing Link, which was meant to bridge the gap kind of between Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. That ROM hack is no more, thanks to Nintendo Legal, of course. But nonetheless, we continue on to something else that's probably a little bit more impressive, interesting, or at least sexier, if you will. We are going to talk about Polka Princess, spelled with a X instead of an E there at near the end, who's currently known as Digital Princess. Now, she is a Twitch streamer and a social media personality and an adult entertainer who loves Pokemon and Nintendo, so much so that she has plenty of Pokemon tattoos and also named her son Onyx, just like the Pokemon. So that's dedication, is what I'm saying. Now, as is common with most brands on social media, she has a merchandising arm as well. Things with her handle, various graphics, most of them Pokemon related, of course. A couple of months ago, Nintendo sent her a cease and desist for all of her merchandise, demanding payment for every bit of her Pokemon adjacent sales, as well as anything that even had Polka Princess on it. Because according to them, according to Nintendo Legal, they own Polka Princess, the name, because it has the prefix Polka in it. People can disagree on this. To quote her directly from a recent interview about the situation, she said, quote, "The first thing I wanted to do was comply completely, because Nintendo is a billion-dollar company, and I'm a small person, and they could literally destroy me," end quote. Now, of course, probably meant figuratively, but that's neither here nor there.
Literally was a bad word to go with there.
But probably meant totally. I imagine that's where it was. But nonetheless, yes, Nintendo's assertion is that if there is anything with the word Polka in it, and there was even a little bit of discussion that when she initially tried to give a little bit of resistance to the cease and desist, that she did have a lawyer, you know, respond and say, "Hey, look, here are all of these people who use Polka in their name, and they even have things, and you're not going after them. Is there a specific reason why I'm being targeted?" And while they wouldn't say it, she says, "Yeah, it's probably because of, because of all the stuff that I do." But nonetheless, it does lead to an overall thing. Now, this is legalese, this is legal adjacent, but this is not going to court. She has decided that she's already gone to work on the rebranding as Digital Princess, and things that she's gone down, chosen not to go down that road. So it's not like we're going to run into a situation where we have Nintendo v. Poca Princess, and we find out whether or not in court, whether or not this, you know, they can really assert that control just because it has the prefix Poca in there. So we don't know. I can sit here and say what I think about it, and I think all of us are probably reacting fairly similarly and saying, that's a bit of a reach, Nintendo. But then again, I'm pretty biased, right? I'm always on team whoever's against Nintendo. Mr. Nice Guy, what's your take on this situation?
I'm not against Nintendo just because they're Nintendo. Like, I love my Nintendo stuff, right? I grew up on Nintendo. I love the stuff that they make, but I also understand wanting to protect your assets. Like, you can't just let someone use your IPs, let someone use your brands without paying royalties or without your permission. I get that. But at the same time, there's a thin line between protecting yourself and being a bully. And I feel like Nintendo has reached the point that they're kind of a bully. And it's so ironic because they make children's games or like family-friendly stuff, but yet they're always going after the little guy or girl. So I guess I just don't get what they're trying to accomplish. In most cases, Mac, if you stand up to a bully, it'll show everyone else on the playground that you can't be bullied anymore, right? But Nintendo continues to stand up to everyone. The little people, the big people, and people keep on doing what they do. So they really have not accomplished anything.
And, I mean, who knows? Maybe it will be somebody else somewhere down the road that does have the kind of money to take this to court and to, you know, push those boundaries and find out where exactly the borderline is. And while I do think it's probably fair to say that Nintendo is certainly within their rights to ask for the merchandising and the like that actually has that has Pokemon stuff in it, whether that's Pokeballs or actual pocket monsters themselves, but, you know, saying that you own the name because it's got Poke in it's a little... I definitely think a little much, but we're not going to solve that. We're not going to solve that now, because this isn't going anywhere currently, not going to be solved anytime in the near future, but here's to hoping that the next time we talk about Pokemon related, that we've got something a little bit more substantive. However, this is big news right now. It is legally adjacent, and I figured, well, if anything's legalese, that would be it.
Well, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in to episode number 161 of Two Nerds in a Pod. Now, before we go, we have one last segment we like to do called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about just that, the cool nerdy stuff we've been into on Xbox, on PlayStation, on mobile, on PC, and everywhere else. The stuff we've been watching on YouTube, on Netflix, on Hulu, on TV, and maybe even some sports ball if you're Maxion. If you're here live, you have a job to do, let us know in the chat the cool nerdy stuff you have been watching and playing, because we're always looking for more nerdy stuff to get into. Mac, I'll lead off today if you're cool with that.
Absolutely.
All right, so the main event as far as what I have been playing this week, I finally started playing Half-Life Alyx. As you guys can see, I have the VR headset behind me here, and I love this bad boy. It's so much fun. I can't wait until freaking Corona's over so Mac can come out and we can just play VR all weekend and have a good time. But Half-Life Alyx, no spoilers, I will say it has changed the way that I look at video games. And that's all I'll say about it. It's a phenomenal game. The attention to detail in Half-Life Alyx is more attention to detail than I have probably seen in any other game that I have played. And I'm only on Chapter 3, so I've really been enjoying that. Still playing a lot of Super Mario 35. That's a great game, should be in the Game of the Year conversation. Do not at me if you disagree. And just playing some stuff with the kids. We did a little bit of Super Smash Brothers and some other stuff. As far as what I've been watching, Mac, I did watch the NBA Finals. Congratulations to LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers for winning the championship. And what else? That's pretty much it. I'll remember some other TV shows later, but for now, that is it. How about you, buddy?
Well, first off, congrats to Spear and Mrs. Spear on their honeymoon. Woo-woo!
Oh, hey, congrats!
So as for me, I've been watching... I introduced my parents to Cobra Kai. They were enjoying the little bit. We also watched Better Call Saul.
Oh, I bet they love that.
I love Better Call Saul. Well, you know, on the one hand, my dad, who, you know, got his JD, was just like, ah, nope, it's too real. It's too real. it brings back unpleasant flashbacks for him, as he says. But yeah, there's that. And what else have we been watching? I want to say that's about it, is you know, a Better Call Saul and Cobra Kai. A little bit of Lucifer, we're in the last season, getting to the end there. As for playing, I haven't been playing much, mostly just the tabletop stuff that I would, you know, a little bit of 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons, a little bit of GURPS, and I spent a lot of time last week prepping for something upcoming in the future. The wheels are turning, but I'll leave it at that. I would love to handle the watching if you'll take the playing, Mr. Nice
Let's
Guy.
Let's do it. You go first, buddy.
So those of you who are here with us live, thanks for letting us know what you're watching. It's great to have something to aim toward next time. Metzgirl's going for Avatar The Last Airbender, solid. The Expanse, solid. Star Trek Deep Space Nine, super solid. Arrested Development, yes, IT crowd, hallelujah, Hamilton. I'll get there eventually.
There's money in the banana stand.
There's always money in the banana stand. Let's see, what else have we got? Ishmobile's watching Outlander and Guardians of the Galaxy, and Galvatron's watching the NBA Finals, The Boys Season 2 Finale, and The Benny Hill Show. Uncle Ruckus is watching The Simpsons post-season basketball, Lakers 2020 NBA Final Champs.
Now, as far as what people are playing, Metzgirl is playing Minecraft, Earthbound, D&D, GURPS, and Trogdor the board game. Uncle Ruckus is playing Star Wars Squadrons. I assume that's what he means by squadrons. You'll have to let me know how that is, man. I hear it's pretty dope. Payday 2 and Metro 2033. And Pazzy is playing Interstellar Rift, Co-op Spaceship Command, and that's it. Ishmobile is playing Insurgency Sandstorm and GURPS. And I believe that is it. Oh, we got Galvatron playing Ghosts of Tsushima, Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War Beta, Blasphemous, and that is it. And then we got Alex Mann playing Tabletop 51 Classic Games. Awesome. Lots of stuff. Well, Mac, why don't you take us home, buddy?
Sure. Thanks, everybody, for coming out, for being a part of the show. It's great to have you here. Episode 161 wouldn't be the same without you. But be sure to say nice things about us online and on podcast platforms everywhere. And show up for the live show Tuesdays at twitch.tv/2nerdsinapod at 8 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Central each week, or as near to each week as we can possibly imagine. Be excellent to each other and party on.
Deuces.